Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It is upon us, one of my favorite days of the year. Thursday, April 24, 2025 is the date. It's night one of the NFL draft, round one of the NFL draft. We have NBA playoffs. We have the Grizzlies and Thunder game three. I don't know where that ranks on the list of to-do for Memphis fans tonight, but they are playing a playoff game tonight. But it is a great day to be in this seat. I am former Memphis Tiger Gabe Kuhn on @Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on @CDunning929. Connor, what's the word, brother?
What's up, man?
Trivia tonight?
Trivia tonight.
It's a lot to watch at trivia, too.
A lot to watch at trivia tonight. I'm sure they'll have the draft on. As soon as the Grizzlies game gets going at about 8:30, they're going to flip that on. We got good beer, good trivia, good pizza. Come on out.
Absolutely. 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to open on some NBA playoffs, talk about the Grizzlies and Thunder tonight. We also have some news in the Tiger basketball recruiting world. Big commitment as of 30 minutes ago, Connor. 30 minutes ago, Joe Tipton put out the shout from On Three. Doug McDaniel, transfer point guard from Michigan and Kansas State, has committed to the University of Memphis. Penny Hardaway and that staff, they just keep cooking. Now, with that, there's been some discussions about funding and Ed Scott. Ed Scott spoke to the media last night. We'll break down all that throughout the show. But as far as guests are concerned, Jeff Calkins will join at 5 o'clock. Plenty of that on the docket with him from the Daily Memphis and the Jeff Calkins Show. And then 6 o'clock, Kyron Samuels from Sports Illustrated. Then we'll get to the Blitz at 6:30. But I got to say, night one, round one of the NFL draft is one of my favorite days of the year for a lot of reasons. One, we get to separate truth from nonsense. There's been a lot of BS out there, smoke screens, anonymous sourced quotes about Shedeur Sanders and how arrogant he is. But also, at the same time, it's one of the few days on the NFL calendar where teams that have no chance of actually contending for the playoffs have hope. You know what I mean? Like, tonight is the night where the Titans and the Browns and the Giants and the Jags and the Raiders and the Jets and the Panthers and the Saints, they talk themselves into having a future All-Pro and potentially being able to get into the playoffs this year. This is one of the few nights in the NFL calendar where you get a whole bunch of that. But it should be really fun. I'm really excited for tonight because I think there's a lot of unknown, Connor, to be honest with you. Obviously, we think, you know, Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, and Abdul Carter, 1 through 3. Draft starts at 4, and then it's going to be a crapshoot from there. I don't really have a full feel for how this could go. You could have a run on offensive linemen. You could see a quarterback in Jackson Dart end up being the second quarterback off the board. We'll talk about that a little bit more later with Kyron Samuels. But tonight, I feel like there's a lot of unknown in this NFL draft.
What's the biggest unknown that you're looking forward to be answered?
I want to see, personally, the quarterbacks, how that shakes itself out. What are you going to see? You're going to see Shedeur Sanders fall to 21. Do you see him fall out of the first round? Jackson Dart, are you going to see somebody Giants, New York Giants, trade up back into the first round after taking Abdul Carter at 3 and try to get Jackson Dart. I'm very curious how the quarterback situation irons itself out. On top of that, this is me being an offensive lineman, being a trench guy. I want to see if there's going to be a run on offensive linemen because there's been a lot of ties to Will Campbell at 4, Kelvin Banks Jr. in the top 10 from Texas. There's so many different guys. Josh Simmons from Ohio State who has a patellar tendon tear. Is he going to go higher than we expect? I get the sense that offensive linemen could come off the board very quickly tonight, which is not the most sexy thing ever. Now, I also love, there's another thing I love about round one of the NFL draft. We're probably about 8 hours away from round one grades. I love seeing round one grades, having no earthly idea actually how they're going to work themselves out. Somebody who has an F grade could have made the best pick in the NFL draft in this first round in 2025. I love NFL draft grades, the immediate reaction and the nonsense that follows. Isn't that the greatest part? Right.
Well, because remember a few years ago, everybody was freaking out about the Lions and all their picks, and it turns out
Jack Campbell, Jameer Gibbs.
Just one of the best drafts we've seen in recent memory.
Brian Branch at the top of the second round.
Yeah, people were like, they took a running back?
F, and look at them 2 years later. They're one of the best teams in the entire National Football League with a great roster that's supplemented by all of the guys we just mentioned, Brian Branch, Jack Campbell, and Jameer Gibbs.
What grade do you think the Titans are going to get for Cam Ward?
I don't know how people are going to go about grading that because it's such an obvious pick and they need to make that pick.
Right.
You have the one quarterback who really, I think, can change the fortunes for the Titans immediately upon getting into the facility. So, like, for me, I think most people should have them at an A just because there's no other pick they can realistically make here. But considering the quarterback draft and the thoughts of it, I could see people sort of going B, maybe C plus.
Would be wild.
I think it's wild, but that's how people go about it. Oh, the quarterback draft's not good enough. They got the number one pick in a bad quarterback draft. Cam Ward in another year, because this is a topic and a narrative that's been created. Because Adam Schefter did his intel thing
right
for ESPN, and there was an anonymous GM. Told him that Cam Ward would be the 7th-ranked quarterback in last year's draft. I don't buy that, but I think there's a view of this quarterback draft just lacking. It's just not a very good quarterback draft in a lot of people's minds. So I could see the grades not being realistic and weighing exactly the decision the Titans have on their hands, which is no decision. It's Cam Ward, Cam Ward, Cam Ward, no doubt.
Do you have a team that you think could be the biggest wild card tonight? Is it the Steelers? Well, Do they try to trade up?
When we think wild card, what are we thinking? Are we thinking trade up,
chaos
trade down,
agent.
Chaos? Okay, I'll give you two. I think the Giants could trade up and really cause some chaos and grab a quarterback named Jackson Dart, which I do not like for Jackson Dart. I'll iron out why I don't like that later. I also think, and this is, I don't think a lot of people are paying attention to this team right now, the Panthers at number 8 could be a chaos agent because I think they could trade down and try to get as many assets as possible in this draft, whether it's a couple of second-round picks, late first, and a second-round pick from another team that wants to trade up and go get their player of choice. I think the Panthers, even though they're not a good team, are in that 8 spot, and that is a tradable pick for them because they have no perfect answer at number 8 if they stick and pick, if that makes sense. So I think they could be a chaos agent tonight. So we'll see how that goes. I did see also, and I want to give a quick shout out, get the round of applause ready. Will Barton, officially the Thrill, has stepped away from the game of basketball. Former Memphis Tiger, former Denver Nugget, really good years in the league, decade plus of really good service. He stepped away. He did put on his official Twitter account today, by the way. I think he tagged Memphis Basketball and says, if Penny wants an assistant coach, he's ready to come.
Yeah, he tweeted at Memphis Basketball, if Penny Hardaway needs an assistant coach, tell Penny to hit me up.
Why not? Why not? I think Ryan Silverfield's done a good job of bringing guys that have been on Memphis's campus in the past back. Why not do that with basketball? I like that idea. I like that idea. Now let's get into the NBA playoffs. The best thing I saw last night, the Cavaliers took a 2-0 commanding series lead over the Miami Heat. They won 121-112. And they did it late, like they did in game one as well. Donovan Mitchell had 30 points, Darius Garland 21 points, 9 assists. But Darius Garland was asked after the game, how do you continue to win games against the Miami Heat? Here was his answer. Oh, God, run it back. Please give me that one more time. Darius, how do you beat the Miami Heat yet again in this series early? Oh, God. Oh, that is brutal, man. I mean, that's the first I've heard of somebody really calling somebody out by name. We are absolutely picking on this guy. It's been obvious on the floor, but to say it after the game, there's a level of disrespect there that I just can't get over. And if I'm Tyler Hero, I would pay half my salary check next year to Tony Allen to teach me something, because this is the type of narrative, especially in a playoff setting, on national television, that will stick with you into the rest of your life, rest of your career. It'll stay with you. And it's one thing to say it, but this is your main matchup in a playoff series, saying you suck publicly on defense, just telling you straight up, you're awful on defense. We're picking on you every time down the floor. Like, the genuine lack of respect it takes to say something like that publicly boggles my mind, Connor. That's beyond the pale. I've never heard anything like that.
It's the diabolical part about it is Tyler Hero has actually been playing really well in this series.
Yeah, great offensively.
But defensively, they are absolutely hunting him. There's no doubt about it. When you watch it, they are constantly trying to get switches until the guy gets Tyler Hero, and then he starts going to work. And it is tough because it's just, it's very funny when you go 14 to 24 from the field, 4 of 11 from 3, drop 33 points, you have 5 assists, 6 rebounds, and all anyone is talking about today is how crap you are on defense. He's probably like, what in the hell? Look around the rest of my team.
Sure.
We're not supposed to be here anyway.
But the defensive thing that Darius Garland said is just far too true. It's a reality.
Oh, he's bad.
It's a reality.
He's bad.
And here's the thing. I'll give Tyler Hero, like, at least some credit here. If he can find a way to just blend in on defense, he will hit another tier as a National Basketball Association player. He'll hit another tier of stardom if he can just blend in, because he'll win more games in the playoffs. That team will be better because he is a damn gifted scorer. One of the more gifted scorers in the National Basketball Association that we don't talk about on a night-to-night basis. Like you said, he had 33 last night. But here's a couple of stats that I was digging through last night, just to try to illustrate how correct Darius Garland is in his sort of assumption that picking on Tyler Hero will win the series for the Cavs. So in game one, the Cavs had an offensive rating of 177.8 when Tyler Hero was the primary defender.
Oh,
meaning,
my God. Did you say 177?
I did. They scored 64 points in 36 possessions when Tyler Hero was the primary defender on the score. The Cavs, when Tyler Hero wasn't the primary defender, had an 111.8 offensive rating. They got 66 points better when Tyler Hero wasn't guarding on ball. 57 points in 51 possessions. Do you know the gravity of those stats and how much weight they hold when it comes to the analytics guys behind the scenes and how a coach decides to go about his game plan? That tells you right there, if you're Kenny Atkinson or you're an offensive coordinator on that Cavs bench, you say every time down the floor until they decide to stop it, we're going to get a switch on Tyler Hero and we're going to abuse him. 177.8 offensive rating, 64 points in 36 possessions when Tyler Hero was on ball, 111.8 when he was not on ball.
That's insane.
It's ridiculous. It's quite frankly ridiculous. Now, let's get to game two. And this is through two games. Tyler Hero's been the screener defender on 50 pick and rolls through two games.
Because
they're abusing him. Through two games, 50 pick and rolls, they've gotten the switch. The Cavs have generated 1.2 points per possession on those trips.
Yeah.
For reference, the leading team in points per possession as a team in the National Basketball Association had a 1.2 point per possession statistic. That's what it looked like. But this is one matchup they're talking about, 1.2 point per possession. He has been utterly embarrassing on the defensive end. You kind of, like, in the back of your mind, you feel bad for the guy. Because it's not just the on-ball traffic cone thing. Off-ball, he's lost. Tyler Hero is a gifted player. He is a gifted NBA player, especially scoring the basketball. But until he fixes some of the defensive issues, it's going to be hard for his team and for him to be a winner.
Right. Yeah, and that's why Tyler Hero can't be your number one guy. He probably can't even really necessarily be your number two guy. He is, I think, best suited to be a three because he cannot be that defender that you need him to because they are hunting him. They've put him in a blender. When you're watching these games, you do kind of feel bad for him because it's so obvious what's happening, and he just does not have the defensive skill to stop it at all. Kenny Atkinson has a beautiful game plan, and that game plan is we are going to put Tyler Hero in the seven circles of hell and see if he can figure it out. And Kenny Atkinson also had one of the best coaching moments I've ever seen last night during that game when he called timeout and further review right in that referee's face. Just honestly, you don't even need to play two more games. Just go ahead and say that it's a sweep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm with you. If they keep picking on Tyler Hero, it's going to be it's over with because you get into late game possessions. You get to the half court game.
And you have
what Ja Morant terms and most NBA players term as a pigeon on the other side that you can pull that string whenever you want to. Tyler Hero being that guy. It's just so hard for the Heat to get stops down the stretch of games when Tyler Hero is going to be the main defender on Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell and Ty Jerome and all these really talented perimeter players for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think it'll be a sweep. Maybe the Heat can pull something out, get a nice lead
at home in the Kaseya Center.
We'll see, but it does not feel like a very positive outlook for the Miami Heat. Also last night, shout out to the Houston Rockets. I thought they responded very, very well. They tied the series up against the Golden State Warriors, and not to be braggadocious, not to break my arm while I'm patting myself on the back, but everything I said about that game before we got out, I talked about it in the rewind.
Yep.
I said, they're letting them play defense, so I'm not worried about that. The officials are calling the game defensively in a way that favors the Rockets. They gave up 95 points to this Warriors team in Game 1, 94 in Game 2. But the difference between Game 1 and Game 2, what did I say? Fred VanVleet may need to step up a little bit, but mostly Jalen Green, who hit two shots in Game 1, will not have another game like that offensively. He was ferocious last night. He was awesome. 38 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 13 for 25 from the field, 8 for 18 from 3. If they can just get decent performances up out of Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green night to night, they can win this series. And also, let's add to the fact, the physicality was up, and with that physicality, Jimmy Butler now going to be questionable for the rest of the series. He took a hard fall directly onto his tailbone, and he's got a pelvic contusion. I believe that's the way they termed it. So no Jimmy Butler. I hate to say it, and maybe he can come back. Maybe he can give them some minutes. No Jimmy Butler. The Warriors aren't winning this series.
No, they shouldn't. If there is no Jimmy Butler for the rest of the series, the Rockets should absolutely win it. And after Game 1, we sat here and said, you're not going to beat the Warriors by trading twos and threes. The Rockets have to go out there, and they have to knock down some threes, and that's exactly what they did in this game. Jimmy Butler going out early definitely changed the game in a big way. They were able to still play physical even after that happened. And the role players for the Rockets really stepped up. Like, Amen Thompson was great. Dylan Brooks was really good last night. Sengun had another good game. They got some, you know, they got some stuff off the bench from Jabari Smith. Terry Eason, he was really good. He's kind of one of the more underrated guys in the league right now. And it's just, if you can be physical with the Warriors and keep up with their three-point shooting, you can beat them. And the Rockets' athleticism really came out last night, especially after Jimmy Butler went out after 8 minutes.
Yeah, and I heard it was Stan Van Gundy on the broadcast. Tom Izzo, apparently, texted him during the broadcast and said, this game is physical. If Tom Izzo is telling you that a game is physical, the game is damn physical. And that's what the Rockets are going to do to wear down this Warriors.
Do we want to talk about the fallout from the fall?
Go ahead. I wasn't planning on it. You can go ahead.
I'm tired of the Warriors. I'm tired of whining.
It was incidental.
The preaching. It's ridiculous. Draymond was playing with like a jackass all night.
Can we be also honest? Like the play, there should be no issue. It was incidental contact that happens night to night in the National Basketball Association. There's nothing about that play where you could go code breaking. You do that conversation where you could say that they tried to intentionally hurt you. There's nothing about that play that led me to believe that something malicious was happening.
Yeah, nothing about Thompson says dirty player. It doesn't. He's never been dirty. It's not all of a sudden in the playoffs, he's not going to turn into some dirty player. He was trying to box out with Draymond. He tripped over his legs, and he accidentally undercut Jimmy Butler. It was a really unfortunate play.
He gives a hell of
play.
A lot of effort, and he flew around.
But these Warriors and their fans, they drive me insane because they have the dirtiest player in the NBA for a decade now in Draymond Green. We have the evidence. He has hurt players before. They freak out every time somebody sneezes on one of their players, try to call them dirty, try to preach to everybody, do the code-breaking crap. I mean, Steve Kerr got up there last night on the podium and was like, I wish that the fans wouldn't chant stuff like F you, Draymond. It's like he's flipping off fans all the time. What are we talking about? He was knocking people over all night. He was doing it in game one, too. He plays like a jackass. If you dish it out, you got to be able to take it, Warriors. I'm so tired of the decade of whining from this team, acting as if they haven't been the luckiest team in the NBA with health over the last decade. Kevin Durant miraculously came to your team, and you still find things to whine about. It drives me insane. I cannot stand them. I can't stand their fans. I need them to go away. And Rockets, please, please, for the rest of us, bury this team.
Amen Thompson did nothing out of the ordinary.
He tripped.
He did nothing out of the ordinary. It was a normal basketball play. It's the dirtiest play I've ever seen. It's unfortunate as hell. But like, even going back to the 2022 Grizzlies Warrior series, like what happened last night is not even in the same realm as Dylan Brooks on Gary Payton II. Like, there's just nothing you can really deep down. Only Warriors fans can find a way to complain about what happened to Jimmy Butler last night.
The play happened because he got tangled up with Draymond. Some people say that Draymond pushed. I don't know if Draymond pushed him. I think he just tripped over his legs. They were trying to. It was Thompson went up for a shot.
It's incidental.
And then he tried to go get his rebound, tripped over like two guys' legs, and unfortunately Jimmy Butler kind of came out of nowhere for the rebound. Would have been a great rebound. And got undercut.
The sport can be physical. The sport is contact.
Right.
It happens.
Nothing was done.
Bodies
on
fly around in playoff basketball. People are giving extra efforts. There's nothing out of the ordinary that led to Jimmy Butler's injury and potential being out for the rest of the season. There's nothing out of the ordinary.
I'm so over the Warriors because they hurt.
Were they really complaining about it? Oh my God!
Yes.
Going after Amen Thompson.
Yes. Oh yes. Their fans are insane.
Okay.
Insane.
All right.
I saw numerous big Warriors accounts saying that he was the dirtiest player.
It was some form of like he didn't.
They were calling it dirty.
They're saying it wasn't accidental.
Correct.
They were trying to say there was a purpose.
Yeah, they were saying that he took out Jimmy Butler.
Well, he did by definition, out Jimmy Butler.
It was accidental.
It was completely accidental. Completely incidental. I didn't see any of that, Connor. To be honest with you, that amazes me. Well, actually, it doesn't amaze me. We're talking about the same fan base that we've dealt with for years and years and years. All right, Grizzlies versus Thunder.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or dsw.com.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
At home, we have to. Thunder are 9.5-point favorites. I heard Jeffrey and David Cobb talk about this. The level of despair and doom and gloom you feel going into the games 3 and games 4 of this series against the Thunder, it is kind of depressing when you think about any other matchup they could have had in the Western Conference when they fell from 2-8. Like, you just would not feel this level of despair if it was anybody but the team on the other side, that historically great 68-win team in the Oklahoma City Thunder. It is depressing to think about it that way because the fall from grace led you to this. You would have a chance to steal a couple of games to bring some excitement against potentially the Rockets or the Nuggets, the Clippers, the Lakers. Just name any other team in the Western Conference in the playoff picture. But this team on the other side, you just have no positive feelings about how the game could go. Even if the Grizzlies somehow miraculously get a lead, we have seen on numerous occasions Thunder go on 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20-0 runs. They can fill it up in a millisecond while you blink. So that it is a frustrating draw and a frustrating reality where we're sitting right now. Because there is theoretical hope. There's no real hope when it comes to the Grizzlies giving us some excitement, potentially winning a game against this.
Right. Like you said, the hope is they could steal a game. I don't know if they would be able to steal two games.
I don't
games.
Think that's realistic, maybe by the way.
Stealing
Even a game? Stealing a game.
I don't. And that's why the conversation about the Grizzlies right now is a nuanced one. And I know in sports talk radio and sports talk in general, nuance is not something that is usually present. But the Thunder are just that good. They would be doing this to most teams they'd be playing. Unfortunately, they're doing it to the Grizzlies, who also are missing two of their top six guys, who also just fired their coach 9 games before the season, who also have a lot of other issues going on with their roster. They are not prepared to face a juggernaut like the Oklahoma City Thunder right now. They are not prepared. They don't have the wing defenders to do it. They don't necessarily have the bigs to do it. Jaren Jackson Jr., he had a good game in game 2, but his first half wasn't very good. He's got to give them a full game. And just by when I say give them a full game, just be on the court. Don't foul. They have the talent with Ja, Bane, and Jaren to maybe make some noise in a game. Maybe. But the depth of the Thunder, SGA's consistency, and their defense is so hard to get past. And it makes the issues of the Grizzlies look 10 times bigger
yes.
than they probably actually are. Are the Grizzlies close to being ready to win a title? No, they're not. I think we can all agree on that.
And the issues we're talking about are relatively big.
Right. I think that there's really 3 teams in the NBA, maybe 4, that you could say are truly ready to win a title right now. I think it's the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Boston Celtics, and probably the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think you've got 3 teams in one tier and then a couple teams in the second tier. And I think the Grizzlies are probably at the bottom of that second tier. They're not ready yet. Some of that has to do with injury. A majority of that, though, has to do with the roster's just
yes.
not good enough. It's as simple as that. They made bets where they shouldn't have, and unfortunately, you're seeing all of those problems bubble to the surface now because you're playing somebody like the Oklahoma City Thunder who exploit every single weakness you have, and they're brutal about it. They never take their foot off of the gas. They bring guys in who can devastate you just as much as their starters can. And I'm not kidding. When I watch the Grizzlies play the Thunder, it feels like they have seven players
on
defense.
Yes.
I'm like,
the rotations
what the hell
are ridiculous.
Is going on? I don't understand it. They bring one guy in, and you're like, who the hell is this guy? He's just as good as the guy that went out. It's nuts. And they have the guy who's probably going to win MVP. They can hit you at all three levels. They can stop you defensively. And they make your problems look like they're a mountain.
Yes. And we talked about it yesterday, but the difference in mentality, just viewing it as a fan on TV or in the arena, the view of the mentality the Thunder have versus what the Grizzlies have going right now, it just feels like the Thunder know this isn't a series. We are going to run through this team in four games. And I hate to say it, it feels like the Grizzlies feel that. Now, I can't jump into Jaren Jackson Jr. or John Morant or Desmond Bane's head and tell you that for sure. But based on body language, the extra efforts right. that aren't there, that is how it feels. It feels like the Thunder are so deep in the craniums of the Memphis Grizzlies players right now that it's a lost cause already.
It's what we talked about in game two. Even when the Grizzlies were making that run, there was never a part of me that thought they were going to come back and win this game. I do think being at home hopefully gives them an extra bit of juice. And if they come out and punch the Thunder in the mouth, which they haven't been able to do all season, but if they're able to do that by some miracle tonight, they could probably be in it. But you're going to have to get 20-plus
from
all
your
the big three, and you're probably going to have to get 35 from Ja.
Yes.
Or from Jaren to win this game.
And the other part that I think is frustrating is...
And maximum effort always.
Here's the legitimate way forward for the Grizzlies to win a game in this series. You have to come out and immediately punch the Thunder in the mouth, get about a 10, 12, hopefully a 20-point lead. If you can ever get to that, I don't think that's possible.
More.
But even with that, if you have that big lead, if you're able to come out hot, you have to hope and pray and cross your fingers that some of these shots that the Thunder are putting up just clank. You have to hope they miss. And the problem with that is every single guy in their starting lineup has offensive ability. Every guy coming off the bench has offensive and three-point ability. It's just there is way too much production and ability from top to bottom on that Thunder roster for me to believe that the Grizzlies can stay above water in any of these games. For me to believe that the Grizzlies can have a chance to win the game in the fourth quarter. I know that's doom and gloom. I know it's negative, but sometimes negativity can be reality. And I think that's the reality that we're faced with.
We talked about it after game two. The Grizzlies have to run. They've got to get out and run.
But they've been getting their ass kicked.
I know. No, I know.
When it comes
what
to
I'm saying, though, is
fast
like,
break points,
you're not
going to
beat this team.
49-9 in fast break points, 49
and
16 in points off turnovers.
Yeah, but you're not going to beat them in the half court. You're just not. Your offense is good enough.
Yes.
It's the main reason the Grizzlies tried to do this new offense was we've seen this happen in the playoffs time and time again. Running
stagnant,
pick and roll becomes
not
stagnant.
Enough movement.
You've relegated Jaren Jackson Jr. to kind of just being there. He hasn't been the same in this new offense. You've got to get out and run. You've got to force turnovers. So really the key tonight, if you want to win, is show up on defense. And unfortunately, they haven't done that in a while. But I'm trying to say the only way to win is you've got to get 20 from the big three. One of them's got to drop 30. You've got to be perfect on defense. The Thunder got to also miss some shots. You got to knock down some threes. Oh, God.
I mean, what you're asking is for the Grizzlies to not be themselves, to be a different team. If you want to win a game against this Thunder team, be a different team altogether. That's what you're asking. And that's why
you gotta be
most
the Grizzlies
people
from
in
December.
Memphis, the fan base, that's why you feel the way you feel right now. And I get it. I completely understand it. Now let's move off of that negativity, and let's go ahead and get to some positivity. Memphis Tigers in the transfer portal just got another commit. We'll tell you who that is on the other side and why it may be the most important most important addition this entire offseason. That's next. This is what Penny Hardaway is saying to the rest of the AAC. You're not like us. You're not like us. Because today, Penny Hardaway got another commit. We know that earlier in the week, he was able to go get former McDonald's All-American and former five-star Aaron Bradshaw away from Ohio State out of the transfer portal. 7'1", 225, a guy who can be a big for this team. But today, I have to say, I think this is the most important transfer portal addition he has made to date this offseason. He got Doug McDaniel from Kansas State, 11 points per game, right around 5 assists per game while playing upwards of 30 minutes per game. 2 years ago at Michigan, Doug McDaniel averaged around 16 points per game, 36% from three, right around 4 assists per game, again, at about a 35-minute per game clip. When you look at this roster and what it could potentially be, you start to feel a lot of relief. Considering what happened with P.J. Haggerty, considering you were going to potentially have to figure out life without him and Dane Danger, P.J. Carter left, you had a bunch of guys leave. He has replenished the roster, Penny Hardaway has, yet again. Point guard, Doug McDaniel. Off guard, potentially Sincere Parker, Zachary Davis from South Carolina as your wing. Aaron Bradshaw at a forward. If you get the waiver for Dane Danger, you could throw him at center. That is something you should be crossing your fingers for, hoping and praying that happens, because if Dane Danger is added to this fold as a 15.8 rebound per game guy, the sky is the limit for this team. But then off the bench, Dante Harris, former 10-point per game scorer. Julius Thedford, a guy who averaged upwards of 12 to 13 points per game at his last stop at Western Kentucky. Quante Berry, who averaged 10 points per game at Temple. Then you have Ashton Hardaway, Daniel Vieira Tuck, and Felipe Patino. That's 11 of the Tigers' 13 scholarships filled. They have it right before we really get to the summer. I think the positive feelings that people are feeling around this team, even with all of the nonsense and the movement and P.J. Haggerty gone this offseason, I think that they're justified. You should feel positive about the way this roster looks like it's coming together.
Absolutely. Two things that the Tigers needed was ball handling and three-point shooting. And today, they picked up a player who was able to provide both of those. Doug McDaniel shot about 37% from three last season. We know that he is a ball handler. They now have ball handling depth, which came into play last year, especially in the NCAA tournament when they didn't have their top two ball handlers. So having Doug McDaniel on the roster, bringing back a guy like Dante Harris, is going to be big, because you also have Cincinnati Parker there who we know can handle the basketball if he needs to. I like the quote that Doug McDaniel gave too. He gave it to Jason Muntz. He said, "I'm a fun player. I like to be flashy sometimes. I feel like the city will enjoy me. But Memphis has been having a lot of success lately, and I'm trying to keep that rolling. That's my focus." I like that Penny is finding players that are going to come in and understand how important this team is to the city. They fit his system, and they're trying to keep this thing rolling. I think that, you know, 1 week ago, we got the news about P.J. Haggerty. And for a moment, we said, okay, what is the plan going to be from Penny Hardaway and his staff? Because we knew that they would have one. We had faith that he was going to be able to go out there and still find good players to bring in for the Memphis Tigers. And they have absolutely done this. It has been a very good week for the Memphis Tigers in the transfer portal.
And the truth of the matter is, I think Doug McDaniel, when you really sit back and look at this transfer portal class, is the most important piece for a Penny Hardaway-led team. And the reason I say that, when we look at the two most successful years under Penny Hardaway, at least in the last four or five, you look at the team with Kendrick Davis. You had a ball mover, a guy who could set up offense and could handle the ball without turning it over. That's similar to Doug McDaniel. Obviously not the scoring punch, but certainly a guy who can set up offense, get the piece, get everything in a row, and handle business from there. Also, you look last year at Tyrese Hunter. I think Tyrese Hunter is a more skilled defender than Doug McDaniel, although Doug McDaniel can do a little bit on ball, averaged 1.7 steals per game last year at Kansas State. He can get some knockaways. He can be disruptive on that end. But you look at the sort of complimentary piece Doug McDaniel to Tyrese Hunter, averaged about the same amount of points, similar three-point shooting ability throughout their careers before they got to the University of Memphis. It's the perfect tie-together piece to get all of these other pieces involved. Because when you look at the rest of the roster, Sincere Parker, he's a guy who could fill it up, 15-point-per-game score, 16-point-per-game score a couple of years ago when he was at SLU. Not a guy who you want the ball in the hands consistently trying to set up offense, not an assist guy. Zachary Davis, not that guy. Of course, when you get to the bigs, they aren't those guys. The only other guy on this roster who gave you a similar skill set to Doug McDaniel was Dante Harris. But Dante Harris was a late addition last offseason from Virginia, hasn't had a whole bunch of runway, and I don't think he has the upside and the experience that Doug McDaniel has. So when you look at the full picture and you look at who Doug McDaniel can be for this team, the tied-together piece, the ball-handling piece, the offensive facilitator that he is, I think we're looking at the most important portal addition of this offseason for Penny Hardaway. Now, that could change pretty quickly, and obviously this wouldn't be a portal addition. If Dane Dange is able to get his waiver, that would absolutely be the most important addition of this offseason. But you still need somebody on ball who can get the ball to Dane Dange in his spots so he can go cook, and Doug McDaniel's perfect for that.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that be a huge issue in the Colorado State game. Dane Dange was going crazy in that first half, and in the second half, they could not figure out a way to get him the basketball, and it's one of the reasons the Tigers lost that game. If Dane can get that waiver by some miracle, again, I still think it's unlikely. I'm holding out a little bit of hope, but it still feels very unlikely, especially given the relationship the University of Memphis has with the NCAA when it comes to waivers. They are usually unsuccessful. So it would be very surprising if this one was successful. But if Dane Dange is able to somehow be on this basketball team next season, they're really damn good. They'll be a really, really good team. They'll absolutely win the American. There's no excuses as to why they shouldn't win the American. NCAA tournament should be an expectation. I still think with the roster that they have, they should still be able to take care of business in the American. I think they are a very good basketball team. I do have a little bit of worry about the wing depth right now, maybe some of the bench depth, but you're hoping that some of the guys who have shown flashes of potential make a leap next year. That's kind of what happened with the team last year. Brought in a couple players. You were hoping a few made a leap, and one of them did. Tyrese Hunter absolutely made a leap. PJ Haggerty got better. If some of these guys that they have brought in can make any sort of leap, this team is going to be very, very difficult to beat in the American, and they would have a shot to make a little bit of noise, I think, in the NCAA tournament.
And what is nice seeing all the additions that have been made this week and through this transfer portal cycle is there's been this ongoing conversation within the athletic department at the University of Memphis, within people that cover the athletic department of the University of Memphis, about football getting more resources than basketball. I think what we're seeing, at least this offseason, is that Penny Hardaway is managing it pretty damn well. Penny Hardaway, regardless of what you think about the divvying up of the resources behind the scenes, the revenue sharing, everything else. Ed Scott actually spoke to the media yesterday. We'll get to that in a second. It is showing that Penny Hardaway still has the upper hand, over a lot of other schools, certainly in the AAC, certainly in the mid-major, when it comes to being able to use his resources for the betterment of his team. So that's nice to see. Now, John Martin, our colleague over here at 92.9 ESPN, wrote a very interesting article at the Daily Memphian. You should go check it out. And the idea behind it was that, you know, with the amount of resources that the football team is getting, that Ryan Silverfield and that program, they need to take advantage and win the AAC. We look at the basketball program, they've been able to do it, and seemingly the idea is, behind the scenes, they have had resources, money, stripped away from them so football can get a little bit more. I don't know if exactly that is how it's playing out, but that is at least the narrative that is being sort of put out there behind the scenes and by people that follow that athletic department. Now, with that, I find that to be an interesting take. I don't blame John for having it. I completely understand it. If you have a program that is going above and beyond, that's winning championships, seemingly you should pour resources into it. Now, with that, this is what John said earlier today in response to the responses he was getting to his article. He said, Memphis football fans get so weirdly defensive. The standard should be the same for every program on campus. When you're the top spender in the AAC, you should win it. Memphis basketball did it last year. Now it's time for football to do the same. I will say, agree wholeheartedly with that sentiment. But the only thing I would say in response, and this may not be directly to John, this may be toward the people that have always followed Memphis basketball, that don't really have the hunger for Memphis football, just because you don't win a championship on the football side with the resources you have, it does not mean you should take resources away and give them to basketball. in my opinion, when you look at a program that you view as an underachiever, what you should do is try to pour more resources into it to make it into a championship contender, to make it to where they can hoist trophies. And in the end of the day, the resources being put into football are for a reason, Connor. We've talked about it on multiple occasions. If you want to get to where you want to go as an athletic department, I don't know when this opportunity is going to present itself. I don't know how it looks. I don't know the future, just like no one knows the future. The presidents at most of these damn institutions in the Power Four and the Group of Five have no idea what the future is going to hold for them. But the truth of the matter is, the resources being poured into football, there is a method to the madness. There's a reason you do that. Football and its viability, its championship ability, the identity you can create behind your football program can potentially propel you, make you more viable for a Power Four conference. So just because you don't see Ryan Silverfield hoisting a trophy and that Memphis football team hoisting a trophy every single year does not mean that you should take money away. In my opinion, if you see them fall short, that should be all the more reason to fund them, to give them more resources so they can eventually get to that point, make themselves more attractive for a Power Four conference. Am I off base with any of what I just said?
I think I understand what you're saying, because the only path to finding a new conference is football. It's not going to happen with basketball, unfortunately. I wish it was
going to happen with basketball, it would have happened already.
Right. It's going to happen with football. So that's why the main reason I think you got to keep giving resources to Memphis football is to make sure that team is good so that you can try to find a pathway to a better conference, which in turn would help your basketball team, which also needs a better conference.
And it would help your funding as well. Those resources right. You feel like have been taken away from Memphis basketball start to flow back in.
That being said, if they don't win a title this year in the American, I don't know what else we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
It's time. Yes. It's been far too long. The excuses have run out. You have the roster. You have the resources. Go win the damn title. Go win it. I'm tired of having to sit here and talk about, well, they won a bowl game.
If they would have lost to UTSA, the whole season would have been different.
Win the damn conference. Win the conference. It's not too much to ask. You've got the resources, you've got the talent, you've got the roster. Go win it. Go win it. Yep. That's all I got to say.
I hear you. And that should be on display coming up on Saturday night in Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium for that spring game. I'm very curious about how that all plays out. We're looking at the quarterback battle and everything else. But I think that we need to approach these conversations with some nuance, with some understanding behind the scenes. Why Ed Scott? Why Tim Duncan? Why these decisions, the resource allocation, what have you? You have to have some understanding why these things are being decided on the way they're being decided on. Before we jump down the throat of Ryan Silverfield, jump down the throat of the football program, jump down the throat of Ed Scott, I think you need to approach this thing with a little more nuance, a little more understanding, and I think we can get where we want to go. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. We'll bring on Jeff Calkins on the other side. Make sure you stick around.